Good morning, everybody. Today's daf, tomorrow's daf, is Bava Basra daf Mem Tes, and we're going to be learning tomorrow's daf, Tisha B'Av's daf, today. So we are holding on daf Mem Ches Amud Beis. We are at Tavi Tala Lepapi Akinara. So toward the end of the page, but about, eight, 9 lines before the end of the page, last word on the line is Tala on daf Mem Ches Amud Beis. So you're sponsored by Dr. David Lander and Arv's wife and children, Adeline and Nishmas, his mother, called about Simcha Aleh Shalom. Also by Daniel Sadie, and for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha of our soldiers and our captives, they should return home safely. Also by Chani and J.J. Hornblass, in memory of his father, the Honorable Jerome Hornblass, Yaakov ben Moshe, whose yahrzeit is today, the Neshama Shavna Aliyah. Also in memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbit on his 5th yahrzeit, Baruch Tzvi ben Ruvain Nassan, from friends of Brian Galbit Zichrono Levracha, his Neshama Shavna Aliyah, and is also sponsored by Shargai Bril, Le'ilu Nishmas, his mother, Chaya Feiga Bas Harav Yonah HaKohen, her Neshama Shavna Aliyah. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to discuss today is, first, the Gemara is going to tell a story relating to Taluyah V'Zavin, relating to a case of someone that's being forced to sell something, and that's going to lead the Gemara into a discussion of someone who says Moda'a Hayudvarenu. If Edim say, well, you know, there was a Moda'a in advance where the guy said that he has no intention whatsoever of selling this property and that he's being forced into doing so. So are people believed to say Moda'a Hayudvarenu? And the Gemara is going to discuss whether people are believed to say Amana Hayudvarenu, that a shtar that they signed was only a shtar Amana. Then the Gemara is going to discuss the Halacha in the Mishnah that a man does not have a chazaka b'nichsei ishto. And the Gemara is going to ask, well, obviously, meaning he's entitled to the peiros, so if he eats the peiros for 3 years, so he's just doing what he's supposed to do as a husband, so how can he possibly claim that that's an indication that the property belongs to him? So the Gemara Namin Beis is going to say, well, wait a second, if we're saying that a person doesn't have a chazaka b'nichsei ishto when he eats the peiros for 3 years, sounds like haraya yesh, that he does have a raya b'nichsei ishto, meaning if he's able to produce edim or a shtar that his wife sold him the field, then that is a valid proof that it belongs to him. But why should that be the case? Maybe the woman could just say, I don't want to disappoint my husband, so I had no intention of selling it to him, but he was going to be all grumpy if I said no to him, so I felt forced into doing it. So, okay, so Bez Shem will discuss that at the end of the daf. So let's begin again. We are holding, how many lines? About 8, 9 lines from the end of the page. Tavi Tala. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. 10 lines from the end of the page. Okay. So Tavi Tala. Last one line is Tala. So Tavi Tala the Papi Akinara. Tavi hung up a guy named Papi on a tree called a Kinra tree in order to force him to sell a particular piece of property. That's how most of the Rishonim understand. That's how the Rashbam understands in his first explanation over here. That's what Rabbeinu Gershom understands. The Rashbam has a second explanation where he hung him up in order to sell him the Kinra. And Tosrid writes in the first pshat of the Rashbam, and he says he can't say that he hung him up on a tree in order to sell him the tree itself, meaning Lechari is trying to say that not like the second pshat in the Rashbam, that where the Rashbam understands that he was forcing him to sell the Kinra, he understands that Kinra is even within the second pshat of the Rashbam, that it's a reference to a type of tree. So anyway, he hung him up either on a tree in order to force him to sell a different piece of karka, or he hung him up somewhere else in order to force him to sell him this tree. Vizabin and Papi sold the karka to Tavi because he felt forced into doing so. So Chasim Rabba Bar Bar Chana Amoda'a. Rabba Bar Chana, Mestama, together with another person, signed on a shtar moda'a that's mevatel any mechira that's going to be done ba'ones after that point of the shtar mechira. So Papi had written prior to the selling, he had suspected that something was going to be up with this Tavi, that someone's going to force him to sell this this piece of karka. So he had written in advance a moda'a that any sale that I do is being done against my will, and I have no interest in selling the property. And Rabbi Chana signed that moda'a. v'ashkalta. And he also signed together with another aide on the shtar that was selling this karka ba'ones that was written after the moda'a. The Rashba makes it sound like ashkalta is just another word for a shtar. That the word ashkalta is just could be any shtar mechira is called an ashkalta. However, the Tashbetz in Tshuva, in the very first Tshuva, writes based on the lashon of the Gemara in Gittin Lamed Gimel, where it says va'ashkale gita al korche, and Rashi says that it means that if someone forced him to give a get, so he says ashkalta apparently is a lashon that we use when we're describing something that is a forced transaction. So we say he signed on the ashkalta. It means the same thing. It's the shtar mechira, but it's a forced shtar mechira, meaning it's a terminology that we're going to use specifically when we describe a forced shtar mechira. So either way, Rabbi Bar Brachana had signed both on the moda'a that had preempted any transaction and had said that the transaction is going to be null and void, as well as on the ashkalta. So Amar Rav Huna, man dechasam ha-moda'a shapir chasam. Whoever signed on the moda'a did the right thing and it's proper and fine because it was written before the actual transaction happened, and therefore you're able to preempt the transaction and be mevatel the transaction. Or man dechasam ha-ashkalta shapir chasam. And whoever signed on the shtar mechira also did the right thing. Now Rava had said back on Daf Mem and Beis that we don't write a moda'a to be mevatel a mechira ba'onas except for specific situations, like the Gemara quotes a story over there with a kerem. And Rav Huna over here is disagreeing, right? Rav Huna is saying that that you do write a moda'a even on a mechira ba'onas, even though a mechira ba'onas is a valid mechira, toliu avzav and zvini zvini. But nevertheless, he holds that if you wrote a moda'a prior to the mechira in order to be mevatel it, then enochinami it is going to become batel. Meaning the machlokas amorayim is for sure there's such a concept called a moda'a. For sure there's such a concept called toliu avzav and zvini zvini. How do those two interact though? Meaning is a moda'a when you don't want to have to face any sort of confrontation, so you write a moda'a so that when the guy is asking you to do something uncomfortable for you, you could just be pleasant and say, yes, I go along with it and it's fine, and therefore the moda'a undoes that transaction. But when it's tell you have a zavin, so we assume agavonse gomeru makne, that in that moment, because of the onus, you're having full das to be makne, regardless of what you put in place in advance. So that's the machlokas between Rava and Rav Huna, that Rava said a moda is not going to work on a mechira ba'onas, because when the mechira is ba'onas, agavonse gomeru makne, that you have full das for the mechira at the time. Whereas over here, Rav Huna is telling us that a moda'a is going to work even to preempt a mechira ba'onas. The Rif writes that no, Rav Huna is not in disagreement with Rava. That which Rava says that if you don't write that you don't write a moda'a on the mechira, it doesn't mean he doesn't mean that a mechira ba'onas. He means on a regular mechira. And Rava is moda that a mechira ba'onas a moda'a is going to work to be mevatel a mechira ba'onas, meaning that a moda'a, just the opposite, that a regular mechira, I mean, Rav said the opposite of what we thought, that a regular mechira, a moda'a is not going to work, because why don't you just put up a fight? I mean, at least just tell the guy that you're not interested. It's dafka mechira ba'onas that a moda'a is going to work, because you see? Meaning, now you understand why I had to write a moda'a. The guy's forcing me into selling it. So I want to make it clear that no matter what happens, I have absolutely no das to sell it. But Pashtus is like Rashbam and Tosos, that it's machlokas Rav and Rav Huna. So Rav Huna says that it's good that he signed the moda'a takes effect, and it's good that he signed the ashkalta. So it says, well, what do you mean it's good that he signed the ashkalta? The ashkalta is now worthless because he signed the moda'a. So manavshach, I moda'a lo ashkalta, I ashkalta lo moda'a. If the moda'a was valid, then the ashkalta is worthless. And if the ashkalta is valid, meaning the shtar is valid, the shtar mechira is valid, then the moda'a turns out to have been worthless. So I answer Gemara, hachi ka'amar. No, what Rav Huna meant to say is as follows: Ilav moda'a. If Papi would not be moser moda'a, man dechasam ashkalta shapur chasam. Then the din would have been that whoever signed on the shtar mechira signed properly, because the mechira is chal even though it was done ba'ones. Had it not been for the moda'a, but bottom line is we do have a moda'a. So the Meiri explains: since he signed the Moda'a, the Mechira is not going to be Chal. Even though Edom signed on the Shtar Moda'a before the Shtar Mechira, they don't need to refrain from signing their own names on the Shtar Mechira in order for the Moda'a to be Chal. Meaning it doesn't weaken the Moda'a in any way when you have the same Edom who signed the Moda'a to also sign the Shtar. No, the Moda'a, the whole point of the Moda'a is to say in advance that whatever the Shtar says should be ignored and is invalid. So it could be the same Edom. It's not really a contradiction. Rav Huna l'tamei, and this is Rav Huna l'shitaso from Daf Mem Zayin Beis. Dam Rav Huna, tell you of a Zabin, Zvine. Rav Huna holds that if a Mechir is done, even Ba'ones, because Agavonso, Gamar Machne, when a person is being forced into something, that causes him to have a certain sense of Gemiras Das, where he's fully committed, so the sale is going to be binding. So it sounds like that now that the Papi gave this Moda'a, the Mechir is not going to be Chal, even though those same Edom signed on the Moda'a and signed on the Shtar Mechira, like the Maisa with Papi. So Eini, so says Gemara, is that really true? La halacha? Vam Rav Nachman, but didn't Rav Nachman tell us? And presumably, we paskin like Rav Nachman, that Eidim Sha'amru, that Eidim who signed on the Shtar Halva'a, and then afterwards they tell us, you know, we signed on the Shtar Halva'a, there was no loan that ever happened. Amana Hayud Varenu. The Shtar was written prior to the Halva'a, and the Lova was just trusting the Malva that he's not going to be Toveya him for the amount of the loan, unless he actually sees and follows it through and actually lends him money. And therefore, this shtar should be worthless, because the shtar doesn't mean anything. It was written in advance just in case the Malva would lend money to the Lova. But as far as we know, something like that never happened. The Malva never actually lent money to the Lova. So, ein nemanim. They're not neman to go apostle the shtar. The Gemara in Ksubis explains in the second parak that since they signed on the shtar, it's as if Niskabele do some bebezdin. They didn't aksum al shtar. When Edom signed on a shtar, that's Edus and Abezdin. So now you're going to come and you're going to say, Apostle, they're being machish, their original Edus. And the halacha is, if Kibin Shigit Shuvein Chazer Magid, once Edom says something in Abezdin, you're not allowed to go and retract it afterwards, once it's Lachar Kdei Dibor. And also, it's Asr to write a shtar amana, because they're signing to that which is Sheker, because there was no loan that happened. And a person, Einod Mason, Russia. So there are two critical principles that would tell us that Edim who had signed on the Shtar are not believed to say Amana Hayud Varenu. Number one, it's Kivin Shigit Shuvenu Chosar Magid. That's critical principle number one. And critical principle number two is Ein Odeh Beis Matzma Rasha. To say that I signed on the Shtar Amana is saying I'm a Rasha. I signed on the Shtar. That was not true. So if they sign on the Shtar Mechira also and they say Modah Hayud Varenu, that the Mocher gave a Modah in front of us prior to the signing of this Shtar Mechira, and the Shtar Mechira was totally Ba'onas, and he told us in advance that it was going to be Ba'onas, ain't Ne'manim. They're not Ne'man to be Mevatel, the Shtar Mechira, because Edom cannot be Machish, their previous Edos. Meaning the Moda'o was not, in this case, was not a document that had predated the Mechira. The Moda'o was only showing up afterwards. So Kivin Shigit Shuvein Chozer Magid. So since Rabbi Bar Chana signed on the Shtar Mechira, so the Chora, the Modah, should not be Mevatalit. So how can Rav Huna say the Modah is Mevatalit? So says Gemara, a very simple chiluk. Hani mili, that which Rav Nachman says, that Edom are not Neman to say Modah Hayud Varenu, that's Alpeh. That's if they say Alpeh, there is no Shtar Modah. For them to say, after there's a Shtar Mechira in place, oh, Modah Hayud Varenu, and it wasn't really true, but they're just telling us, the Eidus and the Shtar is considered Eidus Shenechra Eidus and Bebezdin, so they can't come and be Mevatel, the Eidus after it's already Nechra Eidus and Bebezdin. Aval B'Shtara, as Yishtara Umar L'Shtara, but if it was in a Shtar, then if the Modah was in a Shtar that had predated the actual Shtar Mechira, yeah, so then a Modah that had preempted the Shtar is for sure going to work. The Ramban points out, now they're not Neman to say Balpeh, after the Chasimas Shtar Mechira, that there was a Moda'a prior to that. He says, but that's only when the Ede Moda'a are signed on the Shtar Mechira. But if the mocher gave him hodah in front of two other edim, and in front of two other edim, he said, listen, there's a transaction that's about to happen. It is garbage. It doesn't mean anything. I really don't want to do it. I'm being forced into doing it. And I want to be mevatalit. Even the hodah al-peh can uproot a mechira b'shtar, because those edim will come and they'll say, because over here it's not about al-peh and shtar per se. It's about when was this dated, right? When did we know about this? So if it's the same Edom and the Shtar that then come after they sign the Shtar, first thing we ever heard from them is the Shtar. Then they come after they sign the Shtar and they say, oh yeah, but prior to that he gave him Hoda'a. You can't come tell us new Edos that undoes your Edos B'Shtar. But if it's other Edom that are able to come and say that prior to that there was a Hoda'a, even though they're only saying it Al-Peh, it's not Kivin Shigit Shuvei Nechozer Magid, it's a separate set of Edom. And they're certainly believed to undo the Hoda'a. That's the Ha'ara the Ramban makes, that it's not only about Al-Peh versus Shtar, it's about the fact that it's the same Edim and it's Kivin Shehigid Shuvei Nechozer Magid. But if it's separate Edim, and the Edim that saw the Moda'a, even if it's not Bishtar, were predated the Shtar, then for sure they're going to be believed. Now it's interesting when Rav Nachman said his din. Rav Nachman said Amano Yidvareinu Ein Amanim, Moda'a Yidvareinu Ein Amanim. You know, Lechora, the Ritva points out, he could have said, Edim Shamru Amano Yidvareinu, Moda'a Yidvareinu, Ein Amanim. In one sentence, why does he have to say it in two separate sentences? So the Ritva just points out, because Ravashi disagrees. Because Ravashi holds that only Amana Ein Amanim, whereas Moda'a is Ne'amanim. So since we're going to see soon in the Gemara that Ravashi disagrees with the idea that they're both Ein Amanim, so that's why we have to split them in the first place. Now the Rashbam points out, when you have a shtar that was mekuyam without these edim, so then it's pashut that they're not neman to pasul the shtar. The chiddush is that if they are mekayim the chasimos yideihem, and without their own edus, the shtar mecher would never have been mekuyam. So even then, Rav Nachman is mechadesh that they're not neman to say that it was a shtar amana. And we don't say a pesha asar hu a pesha hitir. Meaning, one might have thought that if let's say the shtar halal in the case of amana hayidvareinu, we have two edim that are signed on a shtar that says that Reuven loaned $1,000 to Shimon, and then those same two edim say, those same two edim verify their signatures, and they say, yeah, those are our signatures, but this whole shtar was a shtar amana, the loan never happened, it was just in the hopes that it might happen, and Shimon was trusting Reuven to write this. So one might have thought, hapesha asar hu hapesha hitir, we're only trusting them that this shtar was valid in the first place. We are no independent kiyum of the shtar. So the Rashbam points out, we do not say hapesha asar hu hapesha hitir over here. So and the Tosfos points out the same thing, that we do not say hapesha asar hu hapesha hitir over here for a variety of reasons. Okay, so now says the Gemara Gufa. Let's go back to that which Rav Nachman said about Amana and Moda'a, and we'll quote a machlokas about it. So Amar Rav Nachman had said that if Edom signed on the Shtar Halva'a, and then they come and they tell us, I know we signed on it, but Amana Hayidvareinu, there was no Halva'a, we just, the Lova trusted the Malva not to be Toveya him with the Shtar prior to the Lova. They're not believed because they can't be chozer from their original edus, and they know the mesim asmarasha, right? Meaning those are the two reasons that they're not believed. Say amana hayidvareinu, because once they're signed in the shtar, that's edus shnechre kivin shech edim shchasm al shtar nasach mishnechre edusim bebezdin. So kivin shegit shuvenu chozer magid. And you know the Mesim Asmarasha, because you have to be a Rasha to sign on the Shtar Amana. Modai Dvarenu, and similarly, if the Edom were signed on a Shtar Mechira, and then they come and they say, Modai Dvarenu, that the Mocher gave him Moda'a in front of us prior to writing this Shtar, that he was an Anus in this Mekach, and he wants to be Mevatel this Mekach, Ein Amanim, they're not believed to be Mevatel the Mechira. So Mar Baravashi says, look, to say is an Amana or a Moda'a is not considered to be a chazara from the original edus. It's adding a detail to the original edus that changes the face of the edus, but it's adding a detail, meaning they're saying, yes, we signed on that shtar. We are mekayim that we signed on that shtar. And it was amana, it was moda'a, so it's a detail. So amana yidvarenu eine amanim. But to say amana yidvarenu even once you've taken away the problem of kivin shigit shuvenu chozer magid, you still have another problem with amana yidvarenu, and that is eino demes matzvarasha. How dare you? How dare a person sign on shtar amana? So we're not going to believe them that they signed on shtar amana. But modayu hayidvarenu, modayu yidvarenu, where the whole problem with saying that modayu yidvarenu was kivin shigit shuvenu chozer magid ne'amanim, that they're going to be believed. My time, what's the chiluk between amano yidvarenu versus modayu yidvarenu? Shezeh nitan likasev. A moda'a, you're allowed to do. It's meant to be written in order to save the person who's being forced from the onus by writing a shtar, you know, that he's being forced to write a shtar. He doesn't want to write a shtar. So they're not saying that they did a maisa of rishus, and therefore they're going to be believed. But vizeh, shtar amano, lo nitan likasev. You're saying that there's a chov here, that the chov never, which never existed, and what you're signing on to is mamash nedus sheker, eino demes matzma rasha, that you absolutely are not allowed to do. But you, the Rashbam says you cannot say the reason they're not neman to say that it's a shtar amana is because they're chozer from the original edus, like Rav Nachman had said, because Marbar Rav Ashi holds that it's not considered that they're being chozer, because otherwise Modal also would be considered chozer, meaning that's not considered a chazara, it's considered an added detail that that we simply didn't have before. So we're saying that that a shtar a moda'a is nitan li kasev. So nitan li kasev means not the moda'a itself. It means that even though there was a moda'a, the shtar mechira is nitan li kasev. Meaning knowing that there's a moda'a put in place in advance, there's no act of rishus in writing the shtar mechira. The shtar mechira is not testifying to anything false. There was an actual kinyan that happened, and the moda'a sort of presumes that there's going to be a mechira. So there's nothing wrong with signing that shtar mechira. Rabbeinu Chananel, however, understands that according to Marbar Rav Ashi, they're neman because they could have written, they could write in the shtar the moda'a that was told to them before the mechira, and then everyone would agree that the shtar moda'a is mevatal, the shtar mechira. Meaning, nitan likasev means that when a moda'a happens in front of you, you are authorized to write it down as a shtar. So since you're authorized to make a shtar that preempts the shtar mechira, so nitan likasev is not that, oh, don't worry, they didn't do an act of rishus by writing the shtar mechira. Nitan likasev is not on the shtar mechira, it's on the shtar moda'a. It's saying that since they saw a moda'a, it was nitan likasev, they're allowed to write a shtar on the moda'a, and then the shtar moda'a would for sure be mevatel the shtar mechira. So even if they didn't actually write the moda'a, nevertheless, they're still going to be ne'eman. The Rashbam Ksuba says similarly, that since they're allowed to write a moda'a without the mocher instructing them to do so, it's as if they wrote the moda'a, and it's like a moda'a that was written before the shtar, it's therefore mevatalit. The edim are believed in this case, not only, the Rashbam points out, not only in the case where the shtar is not going to be mekuyam without the redus, we believe them midin ha-pesha asru ha-pesha hitir, even if it's a shtar mekuyam even without the redus. Because Marbar Rav Ashi holds that there's no shaychus between the two eduyos. The edus on the moda'a or the amana is not soser, the edus on the mechira or the halva'a. However, Tosus writes that it's not a chazara gemura from their original edus, but they're still only going to be believed where ein ksav yodam yotzim makom acher, where we have no independent way of verifying their signatures, where they still have amigo that they could have just never been mekayim the shtar at all. But if you have ksav yodam yotzim makom acher, then they're not going to be believed. If we independently can verify their signatures, then Tosus says they're not going to be believed in such a case. Okay. And then we had said in the Mishnah, have two dots now, v'lo li'ish chazaka b'nichsei ishto, that a man does not have a chazaka in his wife's nechasim. So pshita, obviously if he eats from his wife's, he eats peros from his wife's karka, it doesn't demonstrate any bailus on the karka. After all, kivin dislei pira, When a woman has nuchse milug, so the halacha nuchse milug are the nechasim that belong to the woman, and the husband is only entitled to the achilas peros, as opposed to nuchse tzon barzel, which are the nechasim that the woman brings into the marriage at the time of the nisuin, and we assess their value and the husband's mekabel achrayus on that value. So regardless of whether it goes up in value, goes down in value, he's going to pay that back when it comes time to pay the ksuba. We actually assess that in the ksuba, right? The nechse tzon barzel, whatever she brings into the marriage, we assess, that's not nechse milug. We assess everything that she's bringing in that we're going to define as nechse tzon barzel, and we'll say, okay, so it's mei as a kukim kesef tzaruf. That's how we assess the nechse tzon barzel. And then we don't have to look at the end of the marriage to see if the nechse tzon barzel went up in value, went down in value. It doesn't matter. He's on the hook for exactly mei as a kukim kesef tzaruf, because it's considered as if it's his property, and he's got to, whatever fluctuations it has is up to him. But nichse malug, it's hers, and whatever fluctuations in the value of the property, that goes to her. So if it tripled in value over the course of their marriage, she's going to get triple the value. What he has rights to in the nichse malug is just that while they are married, he's able to be ochel the peros while they are married. And he did exactly that. So kivin deislei pira, piru degachel. So he ate the peros, at the chamar mesakin, that he's allowed to eat. That's not a raya that he's an owner of the karka, and therefore, of course, she doesn't have to make a macha'a when he's eating the peros. Everyone knows that it's just nifse malug peros that he's entitled to. So what's the chiddush that a husband does not have a chazaka bin nifse malug of his wife? So lo tzricha dekasavla dinu dvarim eli b'nechsai. Now, the case is that the husband wrote to the wife that he's being mevater on any zuchus of the peros of a nifse malug. And the chiddush is that even though he no longer has a zuchus in the peros, a woman is not going to be mocha when her husband starts eating the peros, even the peros that he doesn't have any rights to, because since he's supporting her, she's not going to want to rock the boat too much. She's not going to want to start up with him, and therefore she's not going to make a macha. So her failure to make a macha is not an indication of a lack of bailus. So the Rishonim point out over here that you have to say that he didn't just say dinu dvar mainly b'nechsayich, but he added a word. It's dinu dvar mainly b'nechsayich ubeperosehem, because otherwise he would still be entitled to the peros, and the dinu dvarim would only work in the fact that she would be allowed to sell it. Like the Gemara in Ksuba says that. So Tosos points that out over here, that if you were to just say dinu dvarim mainly b'nechsayich, that would be saying I'm still entitled to the peros nechsei malug, but at any point you're allowed to sell the nechsei malug in the middle of the marriage. Normally she would not be allowed to do that. Once he says dinu dvarim mainly b'nechsayich ubeperosehem, then he's actually giving up the nechsei malug. The Rashba and the other Rishonim add that you have to say that the peros peroseha he's also giving up. Otherwise, since he's zocha in the peros of the peros, so the eating of the peros is not a raya because he has some sort of shaychus with the peros. So the Gemara is just being makatzer over here, meaning according to all these Rishonim, you have to say the Gemara, whatever lashon helps to make it that he's not entitled to the peros. But now is not the sugya where we're discussing exactly what lashon helps. That's Masechas Ksuba sugya. So we're just speaking shorthand over here. So whatever lashon helps to make it that it's that he's not getting the peros. So Frakta Gemara, but wait a second. V'chikasav l'may havi. Even if he writes dinu dvar mainly b'nechsayich, what benefit is that? Even though he wrote that, he's still allowed to have the peros of the mechasim because we have a brisa that says so. Tanya, don't we have a brisa that says ha'omer l'chavero, a guy who says to his friend who's a partner with him in a property, that's the assumption over here. Guy says to his partner one of the following three lashonos: dinu dvarim ein li al sadazav, or ve'ein li esekba, or v'yadi misulakas hemana. I am somehow removing myself from this property. Lo amar klum. That is not a lashon of a matana, and therefore it still remains his until he says a lashon of matana, or a lashon of mechira, or a lashon of hefker that's going to work. It's not, the Rashbam writes, what is it if it's not a lashon of matana? It's a lashon tefila. Halavai that I should have no esek. Meaning, ever since I got into this business, it's such a headache. Halavai I didn't shouldn't have to worry about this this business anymore. That's all it is. And he says, Yeshomrim, the Rashbam says that the reason is because he didn't say lo yehei in Lashon Asid, he said ein li in Lashon Hove. But he says that's not true, because and Lashon Hove, it's not true because Yeshlo. I mean, if he's going to say lo yehei, he's going to say I'm hereby committing in the future that I will not have. But when he says ein li, he's saying I currently don't have. Well, that's simply not true that I currently don't have. So it must be that he's saying halavai that I currently didn't have, but I know that I currently still have. That's the other interpretation the Rashbam quotes, but the Rashbam rejects it because it's not the derech of the Gemara to say lo yehei. It's always to say ein li, even when the kavana is lo yehei. So that's not the correct pshat. So the correct pshat is that you just need to use a lashon matana, a lashon hefker, a lashon mechira, some lashon that actually is going to be effective. So bottom line is, the Gemara is asking, how come when it comes to the husband not having chazaka b'nechsei ishto? So we said, what's the case where I had a hava mina that he would have a chazaka b'nechsei ishto? It's where he foregoes all the rights to the payros by saying dinu dvarim mainly. So says the Gemara, when you say dinu dvarim mainly, you don't really forego anything. It doesn't work, because we see when you have a shutaf, to say dinu dvarim mainly doesn't help. So amri la debei Rabbi Yanai, so he said in the base measure of Rabbi Yanai, masnisin, our Mishnah with the husband, b'nichsei ishto, which we said must be talking about a case where he said dinu dvarim mainly b'nichseich, and we said that it works, and he's not able to, and he has, and through that he loses the rights to the payros over nechasim because of the avodah arusa, is when he says dinu dvarim mainly b'nichseich while she's still in arusa, where he's not yet at that point entitled to the payros. Tosus points out the Gemara could have said that he, you know, loved Afka, that he was kosev b'arusa, or he was kosev in a lashon that actually helps, or he's makabel the sada from someone else, al manas she'in lebayil rushuspa. She was makabel the sada from someone else, al manas she'in lebayil rushuspa, or the bayil gave it to her as a matana. So in all those cases, husband will not eat peros, meaning you learn the sugyas of when the husband is not entitled to peros. There are other possibilities, but this is one of the possibilities, that prior to him actually earning the peros, he writes in the dvarim in the tzaych, ukhtar Rav Kahana. And this is aligned with that which Rav Kahana taught. Dam Rav Kahana, because Rav Kahana taught us, Nachla Balo La'adam Mimakom Acher, that if a person receives a Yerusha from somewhere else because of a Takana Drabanan, like a Yerusha of his wife, Adam Masna La Shalo Yerushena, a person is able to make a Tanai that it should not take effect by saying, Dinu Dvar mainly on Nachla Zu, that I don't want to have anything to do with this Nachla. So the Gemara explains what type of Nachla, Chudraba, Dam Rav, Kolomer, EFC. That anyone who says I'm not interested in the Takanas Chachamim like this, which the Gemara will say what Kigon Zos means, then we do listen to him, then that Takana is suspended for him, meaning normally he'd be entitled to certain things, but if he preempts it and says before he even gets it, he says I'm not interested in it, that's going to work. So we said Shelo Yerushena, that he does it on Yerusha. So I mentioned that that's only Yerusha Drabanan, because for Yerusha d'oraisa, like the Rashbam points out, like a Yerusha of his father that he gets from his father, he's not able to say that he's not going to be Zocha. That happens bal karcho, that becomes his, unless he gives it as a matana to somebody else. That's how the Rashbam says. Tosfos Rid writes that even the matana doesn't work against the Yerusha d'oraisa. There's no way out of the Yerusha d'oraisa, because it's only bal reshuso when the Yerusha actually happens. So the Rashbam explains in our sugya that the Nachla Habalo L'Adam is Yerushas Ishto. And the Rashba says, I hold Yerushas Ishto's Daraisa. Yeah, but since Kol Zman, that he didn't marry her, it was not something that he would have been destined to get, he's able to be Mesalek himself from it, Mashen Kin Yerushas Ha'av, where he's already in line to receive it. Meaning, as long as you're alive and your father is alive, so it's already considered that you have some Sheikhus to that Yerusha. But if a man hasn't yet married his wife, so then the Yerusha Sishto, even though it isn't in Daraisa, you're able to preempt and say, I don't want to have anything to do with it. So that you could say that a person can be Masna Aleha Shalo Yerushua. That's how the Rashba explains this can work. So anyway, Mike Gonzos, what Takana were they talking about in the Beis Medrash over there when Rava said that Kagon Zos, you can undo it? So it says, they were talking about the Mizonos that the Chum were Misakin for a woman. So that in exchange for the mezonos, they were masakein that the husband gets the maisiyah dayim that the woman produces. So Rava says a takana like that, which clearly was to benefit her, because most women, they didn't have much of an education, they didn't have high paying jobs, so whatever maisiyah dayim they were going to make was not going to be sufficient to actually feed themselves. And women wanted to know that they were going to be cared for, that they will be able to have food on the table. So the chacham were masakin that the husband has to feed them in exchange for the little maisi adayim that she's going to get. So if you happen to have a woman who has maisi adayim, she became an influencer and she has all this advertising, whatever, you never knew, just from her kitchen. She takes pictures of her recipes and all of a sudden, she's making money by whatever. So now her maisi adayim is worth more than the mezonos. So k'drafunam rav, damravunam rav, yichalish, shtam alabayla, and mezonos. A person could say, a woman could tell her husband, look, don't give me your mezonos, and I'm not going to give you my maisi yadayim, because the chum were mesakein that the woman's mekabel mezonos tachas the maisi yadayim, and because of that, because it's all for her zuchus, she has the ability to forego that zuchus. So that zuchus of mezonos from the husband is a nachla abal liachar mikan, because every day the husband has a new chiyuv to give her mezonos. So her refusal to accept that future chiyuv is going to work. So if that's true by the mezonos, it's for sure true when it comes to the nichsei meluk, that chum mor mesakin, that the husband gets the peros of nichsei meluk. Why? Because that's in exchange for the fact that if she's ever taken captive, he has a chiyuv leftosa. He has a chiyuv to be poed to her. So kolzman that they didn't get married and he was not yet zoch in the karka and their in the peros of her karkaos, he's able to say any pod of any mekabel perosah. So in such a case, our mission needs to say that a woman does not have a chazaka b'nichsei ishto. If he in fact said that, if he had foregone the rights to the peros, that even though min adin he doesn't have the peros, still he's not going to be able to make a chazaka, because we assume the fact that the woman hadn't said anything is because nachas ruach asa labayla, that she was just trying to be nice to her husband. So now, we had said that he doesn't have a cheskas gimel shanim in nichsei ishto, but the implication is haraya yesh, that if he's able to bring edim or a shtar that says that his wife had sold him this field, then we would trust that. So he'd be zoch in the field. So tema, this is difficult because the woman could say that no, I never sold him the field. Nachas ruach asisi lebayli. I know that there's edim. I know that there's a shtar because I told him that I agreed to it. I just didn't want him to get angry at me. So it was nachas ruach asisi lebayli. It was nothing more than that. After all, we have precedent for such a concept. Milo tanan. Don't we learn in a Mishnah Maseches Gittin that lakach min ish bechazav lakach min isha? Let's say a person buys karka that's meshuba to pay off a woman's ksuba, and you buy that karka from the husband, who really that karka should have been earmarked to help pay off the woman's ksuba, and then v'chazav lakach min isha, then you go and you buy that karka for much less money from the isha in order to guarantee that she's not going to come and collect that karka for payment of her ksuba, mekcha batal. The fact that you did a deal with the woman to buy that karka so that you'll avoid her ever having coming to come collect from it, that sale is void. And if the husband dies or if they get divorced, the woman could still go collect that karka from the ksuba, meaning over here mecha batal doesn't mean we're normally. Mecha batal normally means there's no sale whatsoever. Over here there was a sale. You bought the karka from the husband, and the husband had every right to sell the karka. It's his karka. The only thing is, the shtar ksuba predates the time of the sale, so it's meshuba to the ksuba. So you're always nervous that she might, that if they ever get divorced or if he dies first, she's going to come for your karka. So you went and you did a kinyan with her in order to save yourself from that possibility of her coming to collect from this. So that's mechel batel, the fact that you did a transaction with her, and for damim muatim, she was willing to say, okay, I forego the right to ever collect from this karka, that's mechel batel. Why is that mechel batel? Because Alma, it seems that Amra, that the woman could say, I had no intention to sell it. Nachas ruach, hasisi lebayli. I was just trying to make my husband happy. So achanami tema, nachas ruach, hasisi lebayli. So here also, we could say that she was just say Nachas Ruach Hasisa the Baili. So why is it that the Mishnah's mashma that the Mekach is going to be chal, right? The Mishnah's mashma that the Mekach is going to be binding, even though she l'chora she could have said the fact that I sold it to my husband was just a Nachas Ruach Hasisa the Baili. Meaning in this case, I sold it to somebody else to make my husband happy. And when you sell it to the husband, of course it's just to make the husband happy. So it says Marahit Marallah. No, on that Mishnah we said, Amar Rabba Barafuna, Lo Nitzcha Ella Ba'osan Shalosh Sados. Achas Shekasavla Biksubasa, that the Mishnah only meant to say that the Mekach is not going to be called by the three sados that we're going to identify, and one of those three sados is the sada that he wrote for her beferush in the ksuba that it's meshubad for her ksuba. So that we assume she has a certain smichas das, she has a certain reliance that sada will always be there for her. So in such a case, even though it's written in the ksuba that all the nechasim are achray to the ksuba, that one she's really really dependent on. So that one we assume is not going to be. She doesn't really mean to make that a legitimate sale. Va'achashi yichlo b'ksubasa or yuz miyachi de belpe va'achashi echnisu lo shum mishala, or she brought it from her base of via at the time of the nisuin, and they evaluated it so that they'll know that you always have that value to be able to collect from. Okay, so Be'ez Hashem on Wednesday we'll pick up with Lumutemai on the top of Zaf Nun Amar Aleph. Everyone have a wonderful day. An easy and meaningful fast.